Just to fill in a bit more about Mike Shelley before we introduce him, this is his bio, and this will set the scene for the interview with him. He is the CEO of Plus Vital. He's a chemical engineer by background with an MBA from major university in Ireland, School of Business. He started his career in biotech, where he worked in a number of operational and process engineering roles and in Ireland, Switzerland and the USA. And when he completed his MBA, he joined a startup renewable energy company operating in the UK and Ireland on a business development and management position. And he then drifted into the world of equine science. So it's going to be really interesting to catch up with him. And I think we've got him now. Always dodgy trying to try an Irishman late at night over there. How are you, Mike?
Yeah, how are things? Hopefully you can hear me now.
Oh, we've got you. We've got you. We've got you. How are things?
Good. It's late at night, I'm here, but I'm glad to be able to speak to you.
Absolutely. Just to paraphrase, we just want to talk about the evolving science of training racehorses, and one of the most revolutionary sides of it has been the use of DNA testing and in the preparation of horses. Just tell us a little bit of background about Plus Vital, and then we'll talk about the how this has been adapted into the training of racehorses all around the world.
Sure. So Plus Vital is an Irish company. It was actually set up in the mid-70s with the great idea of supplements for horses, which at the time was a groundbreaking idea. It was taking science into horse training and horse racing. But in about 2010 or so, a company at a University College Dublin called Equinome started really getting involved or looking at genetics and how that could be used for horse racing. And Plus Vital and Equinome came together a couple of years later, so now we're all under the same roof. And their idea was very kind of simple, really. And there'd been an explosion in the opportunities for genetic technologies that had been seen in lots of other industries. So they'd been seen in human health, they'd been seen in animal health, so cattle breeding, you know, pig breeding, different things like this. And essentially it was a case of, well, how can we use these tools and apply them to the thoroughbred industry? And actually, if you think about it, you know, horse racing is probably one of the most suitable industries for genetics, because so much of the industry is based upon pedigree. And pedigree is the idea of just looking back in the generations and trying to see which traits get passed through. And, you know, that's pretty much what genetics is. Genetics is a scientific way of looking down at the DNA and seeing which traits get passed down for generations and how they get inherited. So that's what we've been working on since, and that's what we've been doing for the last couple of years.
Well, for 250 years, the training of horses was determined by tradition, as you say, and pedigree, wasn't it? I mean, there's still a large amount of that in the training of racehorses in Europe, where their pedigree is seen as a guide to the way their careers should unfold. And history suggests that often there are many mistakes made. So when trying to sell the idea of this product and of this technology, has it been a challenge to challenge the notion of tradition versus innovation?
Yeah, of course. I think that's in any industry, not just in horse racing, but particularly in this industry where tradition is really revered almost. And I think that when you're bringing something like a new idea to horse racing, it really is going to get tested by people. They're going to approach it skeptically, probably rightly so, and really look to see that it's delivering what it can. I think, you know, genetics, as I said, the fact that it's come in from other industries, people are seeing it all around them a lot more these days, whether it's the ad for ancestry services or in medicine or different things. That probably helps convert some of the skeptics a little bit, that they see that, you know, there actually is something to it. And then the others, there's a little bit of just wait and see how it can unfold in the racetrack and how it can be used. And they hear the stories of you know, people that they respect using it, and then that gives them sort of confidence that there actually is something to it as well. So it's been a bit of a story or a bit of an effort of explaining the story to people over, you know, the last decade or so. But all the time, I think people are gradually realizing the benefit it can offer. I suppose the other thing as well is that people are always worried that it's going to threaten the sport, that it's going to take away the sport of it. You know, people hear genetics and they think, you know, that's going to take all the sport away from the fun. But you know, part of what our job has been is reassuring people as well that it's not going to do that. It's just another tool that's going to assist them in their day-to-day job of getting racehorses off the track and winning races.
Well, I guess the balance for the modern horse trainer is to properly blend the instinct that they've always had and against the science that they can tap into as well. I guess it's all about the balance, isn't it?
Of course, and that's the same as any sport, really. You know, it's art as much as science, and understanding how to balance all the different elements together and find out what works for their operation or what works for the particular horse. And, you know, the modern trainer has an awful lot of things to juggle with day to day anyway, without, you know, more and more, you know, things coming at them. So trying to find a way to bring that information into their daily decisions in a way that adds value and that they can really see the benefit on the racetrack.
When Danny O'Brien, for one, talks about Vowan de Cleer and King of Lair Grants and possibly Russian Camelot, or I don't think he's actually tested him, he talks about TTs and CTs and what those letters indicate to him about how to program his horses. Just tell us about the categorising of horses that is available through DNA testing, through these CCs and TTs. Explain what those things actually mean.
So this all comes back to the discovery that was made by equine scientists, and in particular Professor Emmeline Hill in UCD about 10 years ago, around the speed gene. So it's been christened the speed gene, but in some ways that's a bit of a misnomer. What it actually is a gene that regulates muscle development in the horse. So it regulates how much muscle is put on and what type of muscle. And seen at the thoroughbred, it's got one of the highest ratios of muscle to weight of almost any animal in the world. You can imagine that's very, very important. And what Emmeline discovered is that there are, you know, three effective phenotypes, CC, CT, and TT. And the CC types put on muscle quickly, and they put on more muscle, and it tends to be more fast-twitch muscle. So therefore, they're best suited towards sprint-type races. And at the other end of the scale, the TTs put on slightly less muscle, and it tends to be some more stamina-type muscle. So they tend to be better suited to races which require, you know, stamina or staying. And then the CTs are somewhere in the middle, so they're the kind of classic middle-distance horses.
Do they have to tie into other factors like pedigree, heart score and things like that, or is it an absolute guide?
It's not an absolute guide, but it's a very, very strong indication. It's got a very, very high correlation with the optimum distance range that a horse should run at. Of course, there's other genetic factors that would come into it. And so, you know, to answer your question, in terms of pedigree, you know, essentially pedigree was picking some of this up in some ways, but pedigree can be deceptive as well, because, you know, for a variety of genetic factors, it's not always going to get it right. And yes, there's other genetic factors that come into play in terms of what the optimum distance is as well, the range of other, you know, systems, not just the muscle, but this is by far the most important genetic factor there is. And we've shown in study after study that this correlates very, very highly with the optimum distance range of a horse. So what that means in the real world is that you can take a sample of a horse, take a blood sample of a foal, you know, a couple of days old, and we can provide the genetic results of that foal, say whether it's a CC, CT, or TT, and you understand straight away what the optimum distance that horse is going to run over. What's the distance that it's likely to get its best race at? And that's very, very useful for trainers if they're understanding how they want to train the horse or how they're going to select races or how they're going to plot the path. So you mentioned Danny O'Brien there and Vowan de Cleer. Like, he understood that Vowan de Cleer was a TT, so that, you know, all the way through in the back of his mind, he knew that this is a horse that could get the distance for Melbourne Cup. And that's the example of how it's used in action. Trainers tell us that, you know, they see horses every single day. They see the pedigree, they see them on the gallops, they see the race records. They're very, very experienced professionals. And in our experience, they get it, you know, three times out of four times out of five, they'll guess the correct speed gene part of the horse. So they'll say that horse is a CC, it's a sprinter, and we've genetically tested it. It'll match and we'll be right. But one in four, one in five times, they'll guess one thing and the genetics will actually be different. And that's probably where the real value is, that they're learning something new about their horse that they didn't know. And then they can you know, change their mind and they can, you know, push out the distance or keep it at a sprint distance or whatever the particular piece of information is to get the best out of the horse.
And stop them wasting their time. Like, stop them wandering down paths that are ultimately going to be the wrong one.
Yeah, of course. all about trying to maximize the potential of any particular horse. Like, this isn't saying, this, you know, the speeding isn't saying whether a horse is a good horse or an average horse. It's just saying this is the best distance, the distance that a horse is, you know, best likely to perform at. And understanding that, you can get that kind of distance quicker rather than, you know, trying to zone in it from afar. So that's the value for trainers. And you know, obviously that helps them improve with strike rates and so on, but it also helps, you know, they've got more confidence in decisions when they're making them. And we'll never say that this is the only thing to listen to, but it just provides a level of information that they can use along with all the other bits of information that they're choosing to manage the horse.
Trainers are renowned for always peeking over the fence to see what their neighbour's doing and picking up on new innovations. What's the take-up been like for this technology? Is it more a younger demographic of trainer that's more open-minded towards it? What's the take-up been like?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, people are always trying to see what's next. I think there's been, you know, to be honest, there's been different reactions. There's some trainers who really don't like what we're doing and don't want to see any sort of innovation coming in. That they've got a traditional method and look, it works for them. That's completely understandable. And then there's other trainers who are always looking to try and see how they can improve their operation. It's funny, actually. Sometimes the most successful trainers are the ones who are always curious as to how they can improve, which is possibly some of the reasons why they're the most successful trainers. They're looking at every aspect of their operation. You know, that's not to say that they'll just, you know, completely accept what you say straight away. They'll road test it. They want to see that it works. They'll really push you to make sure you know what you're talking about and so on. But they're trying to see if there's some value in it. And if they see value in it, they're prepared to get involved and get a part of their operation. The likes of Danny O'Brien or others, who see that it really is bringing value to what they're doing.
David Hayes is another in this part of the world, and I know some Japanese trainers and others. Because the old saying used to be that you'd love to be able to look under the bonnet of the, you know, in inverted commas, the car, as in the horse, but it was always impossible. It was a mystery, and there was a lot of wastage as far as people spending a lot of money on a well-bred yearling who may lack all the essential indicators. So it certainly allows us to look under the bonnet. And to my mind, the precursor was almost, I think, the lactic treadmill type exercises that were being used 10 or 15 years ago to where lactic acid levels were used as a guide to fitness and distance range and things like that. Is this merely the next step above that? Is that what this is?
They're all interlinked. They're all interlinked. We run a big project with Jim Bulger, the trainer in Ireland, and, you know, the whole lot of horse scientists spend a lot of time looking at the horses, going up the gallops there, and they're looking at the genetics, they're taking the lactic, they're measuring heart rates, they're doing all this thing, and, you know, they don't operate in silos. They're all part of the same animal. And I think what you're seeing is just the application of sports science to horse racing, and the way that you see sports science being applied to, you know, every other sport that we see in our TVs, and people just looking to try and eke out that edge or understand how to better perform. So, I mean, to my mind, that makes an awful lot of sense if you can really understand how the science can be applied to your operation. The job for companies like us is to take what is complicated science and deliver the product for people that they can really understand it and use it, that they, you know, that they get the benefits straight away without having to get right into lots of detail of the science. So that's what we spend all our time trying to do, take that research and turn it into good product.
All right, so Trainer A is based, say, at Ballarat in Victoria, and he's interested in the genetic testing and DNA of his horses. I'm thinking about cost and availability and practicality. How does that trainer get involved with something like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's relatively simple. I mean, the test I just told you about there, the speeding test, so the price of it is $395 Australian dollars. The process is a blood sample. We take blood samples because, you know, that means that we can ensure that the horse belongs to or is under the control of whoever is sending in the sample. We do that instead of hairs to try and, you know, provide that peace of mind as much as possible. But the sample is sent to our lab in Dublin via courier. So a couple of days later, arrives in our lab in Dublin, and we run our analysis on it, and we have the result back out from a couple of days later. So, you know, every day of the week, we have samples arriving in from Australia, from South Africa, from the UK, from the States, and that's the way it works. It works fairly seamlessly. We've been doing it for, as I said, a decade at this stage. So, and it's all about information. Like, it's genetics, you know, sounds very sciencey, but ultimately we're trying to provide information to people which can inform their decisions and, you know, provide benefit to them. And we've got clients who've been using us for 10 years now, and that's why they keep on using us, is because they find it helps with those decisions.
Mike, in 10 years' time, is this going to be absolutely standard for most, reasonable-sized racing stables? Obviously, the smaller picnic trainers probably won't see the economic value in it, but do you imagine there'll be, at some point, an international database where every horse trained from a significant stable will have this sort of information on file?
It's interesting to say that. I often joke to people in our office, I say, I can't for the life of me see how genetics doesn't become a ubiquitous part of the racing and breeding industry, you know, in the future. I make no claims that we're the people who'll be at the center of it all. It could be someone else. But ultimately, genetics is pedigree 2.0. It's really, you know, understanding what gets passed down in the traits. And if you're a breeder, you know, trying to decide what stallion to send your mare to, or, you know, which foals to keep, or whatever decision that a breeder has all the time, or if you're an owner making similar decisions, or if you're a trainer trying to get the best out of the horses that are in your stable, and genetics can provide information that can assist you with that. It's very hard to see a situation where it just doesn't become more and more, you know, widespread in adaptation. Genetics has applications not just into racing performance like I outlined, but we know that there's health traits which have genetic components, so OCD, fracture risk, roaring, some of these things which are, you know, which worry people all the time, have got genetic components. So perhaps we can identify some of the risk factors of those and see how to manage horses better. We know that they've got, genetic components for breeding. We're doing a lot of work at the moment around inbreeding, which is very topical with the U.S. Jockey Club and some of the work that they're talking about, and book sizes and so on. So there's a role for genetics there too. So I absolutely believe that it will be at the centre of the industry. And you know, that the analogy I make is that when Plus Vital was set up in 1975, and the original founder went from stable to stable saying, you should try supplements, they can really benefit your horse. And people sort of tell them, it's a nice idea, but I'm not sure whether it's really going to work. And now you look around and it's everywhere.
Well,
so it mightn't be next year or 5 years' time, but at some point, people will look back and say, what's the fuss? And it'll be on every sales catalogue and be, you know, widely available information. And as it becomes more widely available, the cost will come down like every other industry.
Well, it's sort of simple and complicated at the same time, but it's absolutely fascinating, Mike, and we're looking forward to seeing how this advances year by year. Thanks very much for joining us on Racing Pulse this morning, and we look forward to further contact in weeks and years to come.
Thank you. I appreciate you not giving the opportunity to tell a little bit about it all.